Hello and welcome to the End of Seeking podcast. This is probably the fourth take, and it's the first one where I actually have my mic on. So
good start all round.
Good start. Fifth time the charm, something like that.
Yeah, and as we were saying, but it wasn't recorded. I think why it was kind of hard to get into this podcast today was because you've been away for a week.
Yeah,
and since you've been back, it's all been very sort of filled with practicalities of life.
Yeah,
and we haven't had a chance to really deeply connect on the level that we're so used to inhabiting together.
Yeah, yeah. The shared sort of contemplative mode.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's sort of, the podcast is a fruit of that.
Exactly. Actually. Yeah.
And so when that's not there, it's not been there, it's a little tricky, actually.
And you'd think, I would think that, you know, if we're spending a lot of time, you know, talking deeply, that by the time we got to a podcast, we'd have nothing to say. But actually, it's the opposite.
It is,
you know, having these sort of deep and, you know, exploratory conversations on the nature of reality tends to bring fruit by the time we get to the podcast.
Yeah, and even beyond just the words of it. Yeah, and even just beyond the words of it, though, it's like, and I think we did talk about this in a past podcast, talking about when you my memory of it. I don't know if we actually talked about this, but this idea of when you separate out and there's a sort of an adjustment that's needed when you come back together.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And that's, so it's like,
to get back right on the same page.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And it's like something that needs to be nurtured and cared for, that garden of that.
Yeah. Garden of insight.
Yeah.
And contemplation.
And connection.
Yeah, for sure. So one thing I've been engaged with is, as you have actually, I'll keep bouncing this back to you, each of us are putting a book together. You're putting a book of spiritual poetry together. And I'm working on, well, different, but how did that come about for you?
So I've wanted to have a book for a number of years. It's been in my awareness, but as the years have gone on, me doing this work, I've been writing less and less. And I had a concerted sort of moment of, I feel called to give more attention to this. And that was a couple of months ago. So give more attention to writing. And I was expecting some sort of prose to come out of it, some sort of more long-winded exploration.
True.
And much to my own surprise, actually what was coming out was sort of meditative poetry, contemplations. It's like from the heart, for the heart type stuff that was coming out. Very much a transmission, it felt like. And that was a total surprise to me. That wasn't what I was aiming for at all. So that's what I've been working on. And I'm at a point where it's...
Figuring out, you know, well, you're not quite there, but you're getting there.
Yeah, getting to the next steps of that publishing process.
Yeah, whether you're gonna seek a publisher, which you might actually, and or just publish it yourself somehow.
A whole new process for sure.
Yeah.
But it, for you, that's something you've sort of been engaged with.
Well, writing's been a big focus was for me for longer and more recently.
Yeah.
So, you know, I was gathering all these, you know, gathering quite a lot of written stuff and I don't...
Well, you only
writing's a practice for me. We started off this podcast. One of the earlier ones was like writing as a spiritual practice and, you know, by extension, creativity as a spiritual practice, and touched on what that looks like.
You started about a year ago really pulling together your writings, because there's so much that is unpublished, but you, from my perspective of it, at least watching you gather some of the things that have been published, but more putting it into a book form.
I think that was it. So, yeah, about a year or more ago, I was thinking, oh, I should, you know, I've been, you know, I'm writing so much, it does beg the question, are you going to put a book out or something? And I haven't structured a narrative book. It's not, I don't have that yet, but that's all right. But what I do have is a bunch of essays, reflections, meditations, posts, some of them, and some of them are, you know, some poetry in there as well. But it's just a sort of a gathering, a collection of, you know, long form, short form, and different stuff. And I thought, well, just gather it together, you know, make, put it, you know, format it, but put it in ebook form, and just so someone could even read it on their Kindle or print out a paperback, you know, to carry around with them. It's a nice idea. So I went down the rabbit hole of formatting, putting that together, getting the right software to figure out how to make this ebook or whatever, or book, and put it out there. And then life happened and we moved. And so it's been on the back burner for a while. So I've revisited, I come back to it, I think, okay, I need to finish this up. And then the demons, you know, right? You know, the demons of doubt. And this is what sometimes comes up with the creative process. And I realize we've talked about the creative process, like early on, I talked about writing as a creative process and how my approach was to really create the conditions. And I have like a set of rules that I've sort of developed. What are the right conditions
that have stood me in really good stead,
that kind of invite the muse, because I don't see writing as my writing. I just see it as you know, the fruit of inspiration that comes to an empty mind. And then I'm just sort of transcribing that. But it was learning to tune into that and trust that and wait for that and then just faithfully transcribe that without resistance or without editing, without censoring, and so getting to that first thought, best thought place. So that was the process of writing. But I posted a lot of this on my website and social media and whatever. I've put out, you know, pieces over time. What's the word? Intermittently and erratically, but it's gone out there. But and sometimes I do face that, like, should I post this? Should I put it? And the feeling of, is this worth putting out there? Is this of interest? And what if no one likes it? What, you know, caring about, you know, the feedback,
the outcome,
right?
Yeah.
And so but that's a really profound place. Of what's that about? And this is across all creative domains.
And it's a very human thing. It's a really human thing to find your place in the world, so to speak, through these kinds of wanderings.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, coming up against it again, because I haven't been publishing much, and so just about finished with putting together the Kindle version of this, and then I start to get all these thoughts, you know, all these feelings about the relationship to putting out creative work. How does that feel, and what are the things that stop us, and what are the things that get in the way, and what's in it? And it's quite an interesting place to explore. It's very rich territory. Because I think there's something about when we put ourselves out there, that impulse to share our creative inspiration, whatever that is, put that out there in the world, whether whatever that looks like for you, but to make it public to make it available for other people then. And in doing so, it's out of your control.
Yeah.
You know, it's completely out of your control. You can't, there's a big unknown about it. And the necessity to let it go, let into the world, knowing that there's a lot of people who are going to have things to say about, you know, our work. It's par for the course, isn't it? You know, especially nowadays when actually we're in the most, a time where people can more readily share the fruits of their creativity than ever before.
And where we are encouraged to have personal opinions, particularly online, and particularly the sort of anonymous nature.
Yeah.
You know, I see people saying things that I can't fathom that they would say that when they were face to face with someone. And so I think that there's this whole heightened experience of both sharing and receiving feedback of that sharing that is...
Well, you expose yourself. It's vulnerable, isn't it? I mean, that's the thing. You keep your head down in life and it's all well and good. You're not going to won't bump into trouble. But if you start to go, oh, I want to share something. You know, I have some creative output. But I think
the far-reaching nature of the internet is, you know, where you would share something and it would maybe get to your local group or your local sort of community or maybe further afield, but a very particular field. And now you have this very sort of, the exposure is on a different level, potentially.
Can be, yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, and so the sort of self-doubt kind of comes around this, came around, why should I bother? I mean, most of what's in there, in this particular case, I've already, you know, it's already out there. With some exceptions, but still that feeling those feelings of oh, is it worth bothering with? And so much of conditioning comes into this. You know, you see how I see how my own conditioning from my own background has fed into my own willingness and comfort with. Or not with, you know, showing the fruits of my sort of creative output. Let's say I didn't have. I mean, funny how writing in a sense is different. When we were living in the States, I was quite into. I spent a few years there, primarily being an artist, a photographer, and. I lived a very, creativity and creative work was what I was into. And it somehow, when I was involved in the visual arts, and I put on like a bunch of, photographic shows and art shows around the town. And I don't know if I felt the same degree of discomfort. As showing, like an exhibition of photography or something like that, as I do when I write. There's somehow, and
it's your inner it's your inner world or your inner musings,
and in a sense, when you put something written out there, you're making a statement, taking a stand, sharing an opinion, arguably, you're stating the nature of your very, very precisely the nature of reality as you see it, or different aspects of it. Somehow I feel more exposed through that stuff, even though I stand by it. But somehow you just know people are gonna, have something to say. I mean, we're living in it. I'm trying to stay off Twitter because it's, oh my God, the level of discourse there. Someone comes out with a very innocent statement and before you know it, it's a horror show. People are freaking horrible, in response to that stuff. And so how do you navigate that, because I don't want that we shouldn't have that stop us from sharing the truth of our own creative expression. You know, we live in a wonderful time of the opportunity where people can really share and, you know, widely their creative fruits. And so part of that is navigating the shadow of that, which is, okay, you know, for every lover, there's a hater. So that's part of it. But I don't actually even care about that. But so it's more about what's going on inside me in regard to that. Oh, is it worth doing? And again, it's the creative thing. Oh, is it worth saying this? Is it worth doing it? Is it worth putting it out? Is this rubbish? You know, all that stuff. But this week you really helped me with something. You know, it was just, at a kind of a half offhand comment that you made.
I think I was on the way out the door.
On the way out the door. And you're... Well, maybe you can. Can you talk?
I think you. So you were sharing your sort of struggle with this, your doubts about this, your wonderings about how to proceed with all of this. Mm. And I can't remember exactly what I said, but something to the effect of just offer it up. See that it's an offering to life and to not take it so personally. And see that life gave this to you, for you, through you, and you're just the vehicle of that offering, of that gift. Mm. So let go of the outcomes. Just offer it up. Yeah. Let life do with it as it wants.
Yeah, and that was a really beautiful. That's a really beautiful insight, because we talked about, you know, writing as a creative process early on in this podcast series, but it was mostly about my own inner process of writing, in this case is creativity in general, but particularly in writing and how I create those conditions and or come to see what the fruitful conditions are that allow the muse to, you know, enter into the process. So I have my rules, you know.
Mm.
But this is about the other step. This is about that was all kind of internal. It's like, what's my process that I use to access the words?
That was episode 3, by the way. I just looked it up as you were speaking.
But this is a different level of the creative process, and I think it's a really important part of the creative process.
Mm.
Which is more, I'd say, it's for some people it's more difficult, for some people it's less. And for me it's challenging because I'm an introvert. I genuinely am a hermit. I just want to be left alone. That's my key goal in life. Leave me alone. Not entirely, but I'm much more at home, and my writing has been, for me, more. But it's quite clear sometimes that what gets written wants to be published, wants to be posted, wants to be put out there. It's not just for me. And that's what you were talking about, you know, that which is given to me, because I'm not generating these thoughts from myself. I'm in silent mind, no mind, and the thoughts arise, and I'm really just capturing and transcribing what's coming up without analysis, without editing, without censoring. And that's been part of the conditions, is to really step out of the way of the process that emerges in the right conditions.
And so it's almost what we're talking about here today is almost like the continuation of that.
Yeah.
It's like how to continue to step out of the way of the outcome of that and let it be an offering into the world.
Right on. Yeah, that.
And I think that's the shift, is to recognize, no, this too.
Yeah.
Needs to be done in that manner.
So finding that. So now it's almost an extension into my guide, my rules, my approach, my process, my creative process, is finding now, okay, what are the particularities and the pitfalls and the issues that arise when what is given to me wants to be put out.
Mm.
It's not, you know, it
It's not for your ears
and
only.
How do I do that? And, you know, not to say I've published and I haven't thought about it much, but sometimes I've published things and I've felt very exposed, even though there's nothing, you know.
Yeah.
Nothing
terrible. It's not like you don't stand by it. It's just somehow the act of publishing it.
It's just some sense in me, the act of, and it's hard to account for that.
Well, as the sort of classic hermit that you are, you could account for it somewhat by the stepping out into the world.
Yes, it's a different mode.
So the
mode of that internal creative act of sitting there and writing and is a different mode to actually putting something out there, and in doing so you're throwing a stone in a pond.
Yeah.
You know, and ripples and going to go out and ripples are going to return. So, or not. I mean, things get completely ignored sometimes, but, you know, it's a different mode.
Yeah.
So, yeah, your attitude to that was really beautiful. This idea that make it an offering. It's an offering in the same way as, you know, that I accept the offering of the words as they come. I make that offering in a sense to God, to life, to the world, to the universe. Just put it out there without any, was the important part, the sheer letting go of that and the image of that, of making an offering to, treating your creative work as an offering, putting it out there, an offering to God or life or however you want to look at it. But it's a complete letting go. It's like you're gathering a garland of flowers and you've gathered it all together and then you lay it on the altar of life.
Yeah, I mean,
it's out there. It's gone. It's out of your hands then. And
for me, this is how I've approached all the work that I do, is to see it as an offering. To see, you know, that's my relationship with transmissions, even as I'm offering my mind, my body, my system, my being to be the vessel of that. Yeah. It's an offering. I'm offering that to life. I put my head down on the floor and offer that to life. Yeah. And the same thing with the poems that have been coming. They'll be offered up. Mm. The work I do, the satsangs I give, all the words that come, both spoken and written, is the relationship to life to me is that of in service, is that of offering. And when you start interacting with life in those terms, you are in a place of surrender, you are in a place of trust that whatever the outcome of what is being offered up, that's okay, that's entirely correct. And in that way, it becomes much more about the offering rather than the how it's received.
Yeah, or some need to maintain control over it, which is impossible. I mean,
yes.
to you know, once you put it out there into the world, it's in the world. The world kind of owns it in some sense.
Yeah.
Life owns it.
I mean, I've always struggled with that a little bit. For me, video is where I struggle with that more than in words.
What do you mean struggle with?
What I struggle with is as soon as you put something out there, it's like you're pinned to that. And my experience is it's so fast. Everything is evolving and moving and growing so fast. I am evolving and moving and growing so far. My views, my way of speaking, how I approach things is so different today than it was a week ago or even a month ago or definitely a year ago.
But it's also because arguably, and I was looking back at when I was putting together this book and reviewing the earliest things I had written, I thought, do I still stand by this? Yeah, absolutely, I stand by it. You know, yeah. I've evolved, quotes, as you were saying, in different ways, but the core of it remains valid.
Truth remains truth.
So part of the problem is I would say is Not that there's necessarily so much change that the earliest things you look back and go, oh, I don't stand by that anymore. It's not quite that.
No, it's not that at all.
There's a core of that. But it's that, I would say, this truth, this reality that we're trying to communicate through words, through whatever, through video, also the transmission's already in place and energetically, but trying to communicate, you know, semantically. We've talked about this before. The two ideal modes are silence or endless exposition, endless qualification. You want to, so if you take a couple of minutes or a short piece of writing or something and put it out there, that's not going to be complete, right?
No, never.
It's not going to, and so you know that.
No matter how accurate it is.
Yeah, but because it's bound by its own context and its own, and who it was aimed at, what was the mode at the time. You know, there's very few universal teachings here that stand entirely without...
Other than silence.
Other than the silence.
Other than the transmission.
Yes, exactly. So you know that you're going to say something. Someone will go, blah, 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 blah. Someone's going to go, well, that doesn't make me... You go, well, the context in which this was spoken.
Yeah.
I mean, Ramana Maharshi. I mean, everyone thinks Ramana Maharshi, oh, he's got this universal teaching and all that. But actually, it was never his universal teaching. It was always to someone. It was always to someone and some question, and that person was in a very particular place in their spiritual path, and he would speak to them right where they were. And so you see these people who recount spiritual teachings from their minds and from their knowledge and from their learnings use the utterance of a sage to state something universal. But actually, there's very few universal teachings in there. It's mostly very particular, and you have to be very careful about...
That's an interesting point you're making, because I often have people come up to me and say, oh, this so-and-so spiritual teacher said this. What's your response to that? And it's almost entirely... The response is, well, it's tricky to know, unless I was having a conversation with them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I don't know in what context they were saying that.
Yes.
And so you can guess, and most of the time it's probably fairly accurate guess, but you don't really know.
No.
Unless you are having a contextual conversation.
So that's why it's sort of tricky to put out, say, a written piece or... a video of a clip of a satsang that answers a particular question of a particular person on a particular day, and it has value. You can resonate with that, but it's never going to be complete, and that's not its intention.
No.
And anyway, this touches on something else that we've been talking about, which is the secondary nature of the words, and the real juice of spiritual quotes teaching, satsang, is in the living transmission, the energetic quality of the transmission, of what, you know, that's why silence is so powerful.
Yeah.
When you're around, you know, a spiritual teacher or something, there's an energetic transmission that is primary.
Yeah, that you can feel when you're with people. I was saying earlier today, you know, even just looking at a photo of, say, Ananda Moyima or Ramana Maharshi, or, you know, even just a photo has the energy of what and who they are.
Yeah,
it there.
Enlivens the, you know, another view, it enlivens the energy in us, right? I mean, that's the idea of transmission, transmitted in the non-dual sense of it. You know, it's just the oneness. So even though you feel like you're receiving a transmission, in some sense, it's on its own level that's true. But it's also the fact that the vicinity of that person and that activity is enlivening your own true nature.
Yeah, it's a, as I've said before, it's that sort of the transmitter, quotes, is singing that song of that transmission.
Yeah.
And in that singing of that song, you as the person, quotes, receiving that transmission are actually just attuning to that quality and that transmission and what that transmission is pointing to in yourself.
Yeah.
And so as such, you're not actually getting anything in a dualistic term. Yeah. You're not receiving anything in a dualistic term, but something is enlivened, something that maybe wasn't so loud in your experience, so noticed, so lived in your experience, becomes more noticeable, more apparent. But yeah, even, you know, symbols, you forget about, we're talking about photographs here, and we talked about sitting with someone, but even just symbols of, you know, I think of Buddhism, I think of Christianity, you know, like these are symbols. They've turned into symbols, let's say. There are symbols within them. And they are pointing to...
Yeah, they have potency. So
they're pointing to the nature that was revealed through those teachers and teachings.
I remember when I was... I mean, the last year or two of my seeking was definitely... The main, although I was still meditating and I was still practicing present moment awareness and notice and return, short moments, I was using a lot of online video content and audio of awakened teachers that I was aware of at the time.
Mm.
And because I was attuned and sensitive to the that energetic level, and I was recognizing, oh, this sitting with this was meditating me.
Was turning up the volume of that. One way of looking
at it. It was almost like I was being meditated. I could feel the same feeling, sense, deep sense, just sitting with someone, you know, online, as I was when I was in my own deep meditation. So I was using that. But I remember, and touching on that point that you were saying, and I was sensitive to it. Say I was reading a book, say by someone like Ramana or Adyashanti or someone like that. I was reading, and again, I was aware of even Eckhart Tolle. I mean, he even names it in his book about this level of transmission being happening, you know, beneath the words. Let's say the words are, you know, being carried along by that. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
And so I was remember reading and going, God, it's in here too. You know, it's in this. And then I was going, well, how much of this do I need in order to receive this transmission or to discover this transmission? Say, you know, a whole page, half a page, a paragraph, a sentence, a word. And then you go, well, where is this transmission coming from and going to? What, you know, and so, you know, when you dive into the nature of this, of the transmission, and you really dig into the bottom of it, the sort of duality does tend to be deconstructed and falls apart, and you end up in this sort of, oh, it's all me, it's all I, it's all self. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, I've been really feeling that sort of sitting with these poems that are sort of whispering to me from life. The energy of them is sort of calling to them, to themselves somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
To the depth of life.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's the words, but it's not the words. It's the words are just the vehicle by which the transmission of life is calling you back to itself.
Yeah. So that, back to the offering idea, it's a really profound principle that, in effect, it's a version of sacrifice almost. It's the same thing. You give something up or you give something to, and you let go. It's out of your control then. It becomes your offering. And there's a really profound, I feel, aspect to that, that's about severing ownership somehow as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, or the need to control.
Yeah, the need to have it be your success or your failure as well, and to instead to see that this is life's sort of pursuit of what needs to be expressed.
Yeah.
And yes, you happen to be the vehicle in which that expression is happening.
Yeah.
Physically, you know, the writing on the page or whatever it might be. But it's the giving up of the agenda, the personal agenda, the giving up of the sense of I'm doing this, I'm doing it right, or I'm doing it wrong, and actually just trusting that this is what life wants to bring into manifestation. This is what life wants to bring into fruition. This is what is called forth.
It's interesting that a part of it as well is about by divesting, by making the offering, you basically say, this is complete. Mm-hmm. This piece mm-hmm. is done. This is complete.
Mm.
It goes out.
Yes.
And allows you then to move on.
I made a little comment to you, I think it was yesterday, talking about, because it was furthering this conversation of offering that we were naturally having, and this sense of still a tension of holding on there. And my point to you was, well, it's not ready to go out yet. That's why there's still that tension of holding on there, because actually there's still some work for you to do. There's still some editing. There's still some attending to before that offering can be let go.
Yeah.
So it's entirely correct that life has you in that slight tension of holding on there, because actually it's not ready to be let go of.
No.
And it would be wrong for it to be let go of now, because it's not ripe.
It's not the full offering.
It's that thing of the branch holds on to the fruit until it's ripe and then it drops.
Yeah.
And so it's that. The offering happens when the fruit is ripe and it's ready to go out.
Yeah.
But any time prior to that, it makes perfect sense that there would be this slight sort of I don't mean holding on in a grasping way, but there is a holding there. There is a still.
There's still a work in progress.
Exactly.
Let's say.
Exactly.
And there is. I about a year ago, I got a book, and I haven't really dug into it as much as I really want to, but I will do. It's Rick Rubin's book, The Creative Act, I think it's called. He's just phenomenal as a creator, and he's all about. You know, and he's very much like this, you know, our work is an offering to God, a gift to God or whatever, so I see it as I won't paraphrase him here, so I'll just drop that. But one of the things that stuck with me was also this idea of perfectionism, that if you sit on your work, your creative work too much, and you sit and you work on it, you go, I'll only put it out when it's done. And you can really end up never finishing up, going this full stop, let it go, which does allow you then to move on to the next, the new fresh expression. And I remember when I was doing photographic exhibitions in America, and by the time I'd got to an exhibition, you know, it was all old work by nature, right? I'd kind of moved on, and I had to had to find myself in there again, realign myself with that work. Fit and complete it, finish it, and then put it out. But it was in doing that last step, putting it out, putting it up, that allowed me then to, okay, that's that. Next, what's next? Because that's, you know, as a creative, that you're always after the next. You don't necessarily want to keep, you know, sitting on what one's already done. And that's tapping into that life force, isn't it? That endless, the upswelling of the creativity. Yeah, that comes.
And it is an endless upswelling, an endless flow. I mean, like, I'm obviously putting together this book right now, but it's like there's just more and more coming, and I don't anticipate that that's going to stop. But at some point, you've got to go, okay, here. This is enough for now.
Yeah.
I'll put that out there. And
volume
then,
one.
Yeah, then we continue on.
Yeah, so that really helped me. Now I see it. Okay, I've got to finish what I'm doing with it, complete it, wrap it up, offer it up.
Yeah.
And that's good.
Yeah. And I think there's so many things in life in which we can find that attitude, find that relationship with life, where what we are doing, whether it be the most fantastical, big, grand idea, or whether it is just the smallest of seemingly mundane activities, to have that relationship of offering it to life can be really... sort of a beautiful way of dancing with life, I think.
Well, it's really, and we've talked about this before in the podcast, is kenosis. It's the version of it, which is to say self-emptying.
Yeah.
That by offering and emptying ourselves out, by giving everything up, we are refilled more plenty. And the more we give out, the more we get refilled. Ironically, and that's the principle of generosity: give in order to receive. And you know, by giving, you receive with even greater.
Yeah, give without outcome. And I think there's where the fine line
is. Non-transactional.
When there's a giving there that has an assumption of something in return.
Yeah,
it's a giving almost from a lack, as in you're giving it to get something.
Yeah.
It's not just an offering at that point. It's giving in a transactional manner.
Yeah.
And I think for me, that's where I've had to learn the difference for me, where something is just genuinely an offering, or whether there is something, there's some expectation,
there's
some
a thread or
necessity or need of or wanting that is behind the giving, actually.
Yeah.
And where there's a distortion there. It's not truly giving in the way that we are talking about here.
Well, it's like that the biblical parable, you know, in terms of when our giving and our generosity, you know, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing. It's that you give with the left and the right hand doesn't know, and so there's a complete letting go, isn't there? It's not let go and hold on to some strings. That's, you know, giving with as you say, there's an expectation of a return, even subtle.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it's a case of just give. Yeah. And offer, let go. That's the kenosis, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't hold anything back.
Yeah.
You don't hold anything back.
Yeah.
But we're so conditioned not to. And that's what I was talking about when I'm exploring my own responses to, you know, to offering up whatever it is I'm sort of called to offer up. You know, any discomfort that might arise within me is actually to do with a kind of a conditioned,
it's a leftover, a
residual conditioned response. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's the yes to it. There's the yes to emptying out and to offering up.
Yeah.
And yet there's some, you know, some little flutters and feelings. Oh, that's interesting. Where's that? What's the thinking around that? What have I been conditioned into?
Yeah.
Where this offering up, this free giving of offering up, where what is my condition disagreeing with that?
Yeah.
What's the story of the residual conditioning that says, oh, well, you should be doing it for this and that. No, don't do it that way. Do it that, you know.
Yeah. And it's to be really courageous for me in willing to explore those
yeah,
old conditionings, without judgment of them, but just the exploration of them is what liberated in that just innocent exploration. Then they are liberated. These old conditionings are liberated.
Yeah.
You're not subject to them in the same way, subject to the effects of the distortion of them in the same way.
And I think a big one of them, particularly in our modern world, is transactionality.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
Killer.
And, you know, I get it. You know, there are a lot of professionals out there and stuff, and I'm not one of them. That transactional mode doesn't particularly lend itself well to the creative act, or even this act of, you know, of things like any of this. You have to just put it out there and not have any strings attached to it, it seems to me. So it really is, on a spiritual level, it is this kenosis. It is this emptying. It is the offering up. One big part of it is that life moves so fast that if we hold too tightly to what we have, we forego the opportunity for all the freshness that wants to arise.
Yeah.
Life is constant change, and
we can't hold on to what we have anyway.
No.
We try, and that I think causes an awful lot of suffering.
Yeah.
To try and hold on to something that actually is not ours to hold on to.
Yeah.
And I think,
and you can't anyway. You can tighten up, grasp, and, you know, attempt to bolster.
Yeah. It's like trying to hold on to sand as it slips through your fingers.
Yeah.
And yet more sand pours in.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then to feel the texture of the sand pouring through your fingers in itself is enough.
Yeah. And so so you're right earlier, it's a scarcity mindset. It's a lack scarcity. Yeah. If I let go of this, nothing will come to replace it.
Yeah.
If I let go of this, I want life itself won't provide.
Yeah.
With what I need and what I, you know.
Yeah, I think most, if not all of us, have some of that programming around us.
Oh, it's definitely deep in the modern culture,
and
even pre-modern, to be fair. I mean, but
a lot of us have inherited those ways of interacting with life, which is a fear around scarcity, a fear around lack.
But it really gets in the way of our desire and our impulse to give of ourselves, because the big part of the creative act for me is this the action of inspiration. Just that arising of inspiration, it comes in and it fills you, and you know, your whatever your creative whatever it is. For you, and then you want to, oh, you go, oh, just the natural, like a child going, look at my picture, right? Right, look what I did, mommy.
Yeah,
right, that the innocence of that act.
Yeah.
But we're then conditioned to go, oh, you need to make sure that you don't give that away. You make sure that you get something for that before you
but
give
it was
that
a
picture.
Gift in the first place.
It was a gift,
that inspiration,
it is a gift.
You know, like I see inspiration, whether that be in terms of the more like creative artistic expression, that inspiration, but just inspiration generally well.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
It's a gift. It's a seed planted in the heart. Yeah. That's my fundamental view of it. We don't choose to have inspiration or not. Inspiration comes over us. Inspiration alights in our heart and starts to take form. And this is why it can only ever be an offering, because it is only ever a gift.
Yeah. It's very difficult. It's very difficult in the world we live in to really operate from that level. Because everything's one-to-one, everything's transactional. And so to live freely and trust life to take care and go, I'm going to just give of myself and of what I'm doing and let life actually step in. And if life chooses to take care and pay the bills, that kind of thing, then they have to rely on that.
It does require such a deep meeting of your fear and therefore your trust beneath that fear to come to a place of trust with life.
But otherwise you're just bargaining with everyone and everything and bargaining with life. I'm not going to do this unless you assure me. And I see that a lot in, you know, I see it in people who come for sessions sometimes or in satsang. It's they're awakening, they're on the path, they're opening up, the clarity is coming. But, you know, it requires a deep surrender ultimately. It is, let's say, the deep surrender that characterizes, true awakening, I'd argue. But they're not willing to put themselves on the chopping block unless they are fully assured that there's all going to be fine and they're going to get what they need at the other side. And you go, it doesn't work like that. You have to just give it all up. You have to, at some point, you have to jump out of the plane. At some point, you have to take the step off into the free fall. You can't get your awakening before you surrender. You have to surrender to get, and there's a leap of faith. There's a gap there, which you go, okay, you know what? Bum, I'm going to give it, I give it all up. I give it all up. And it's the most profound.
It is. It's because where that holding on becomes too painful and the futility of that is seen, this is where the hand starts to open. Yeah. The surrender starts to happen and the giving up happens. And in that giving up, there's where the clarity is found, the peace is found, the freedom is found. But you can't find it beforehand.
No, you can't.
It's
not transactional. No, it's not like one hand gives while the other hand's receiving.
It's like putting one foot on the next stone.
Yeah.
Before you've taken the other foot off, and it's like no. You're all in.
And so that's really interesting. And so surrender is not just a surrender to life, but a surrender of everything that you are and have and desire and feel for. It's a surrender of everything as well as a surrender to. So it's kind of an interesting place, but it's non-transactional.
Yeah, it's non-one-to-one correlation
as well. No, exactly. You don't, you know, one hand takes, the other one gives. It's like, no, I'm open hand, I'm gone, I'm done.
I did an interview yesterday for an upcoming event and this was touched on in that a little bit, this sort of surrendering of outcomes.
Yeah.
And in that was asked, about those people who won't surrender unless they know exactly what they, I mean, you've just said it, but this is a very concrete example of that. And it was to do with transmissions in particular, you know, that they won't, because when I give a transmission, I always suggest that someone say yes in their heart.
Yes.
Now it's not a yes to me, Imogen, personally.
No.
It's actually a yes to themselves. Yeah. It's a yes to their deeper nature. It's yes to life. It's a yes to that ground of being. It's not a yes to get something. It's a yes to what is already there. But you can't taste that unless you say that yes in some ways.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's like you can't guarantee anything in saying that yes. It's just the yes in itself.
Yeah.
Is what makes you open to...
Well, it's living in that yes then, isn't it? I mean, really the awakened condition is in a sense one big open ground of yes.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not, you know, as it pertains to transmissions, there's no guarantees, there's no like certificate at the end of the day.
Right.
Here we go, you've said your yes and this is what you get in return.
Yeah.
It's and so that is very hard for the mind to grasp. Where I go with all of that is to see where that's coming from. That need for certainty, that need for an outcome, that need for stability and it comes from the mind that wants to know and only knows how to know. And so it is, when you have the recognition of that's where it's coming from, that's the level in which you're functioning, you can transcend that, yet include it. You can transcend it. You can transcend into the mystery, seeing that actually it's okay. I can let go of that by actually including it, by actually saying, ah, yeah, okay, this is coming from the mind that perceives lack, that perceives
wants something
scarcity
to hold on to.
Exactly. And so as soon as you see that, and we could apply this generally here, it's like as soon as you see that, this is where you see that there is a letting go possible, even in amongst the desperate clamberings of the mind to hold on.
And of course, the idea that you can hold on to anything else, anything at all, really, is delusionary. That's a strong word, but you know, it's not. Point is that the very nature of reality is groundless. But it's in that groundlessness that one finds one security, actually.
Absolutely.
And stability. Yeah.
So we can let go of outcomes, but we don't have to reject them. We can just see where they're coming from, where the necessity to have outcomes comes from.
And it's about putting conditions on life. I'll do this only if that.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure life really works quite like
that. No, it's to see the futility of that. Yeah. That's not how life works.
And, you know, it's interesting. One of the characteristics is talking about of those who are very rapidly approaching, you know, non-dual awakening. One of the aspects is this sense at a certain level, at a certain time, there's this sense that they're trying to transact with life. Transact with God, transact with, you know, consciousness, say, oh, well, I'll give that, but if you give that, if you give this, and it's only once the futility and of that transactional mode is seen through, you go, oh, I can't bargain with this.
Well, that's when you would describe the end of seeking coming about.
Yeah.
It's the recognition of, this whole thing, this whole mechanism.
Like I'm in control, I can transact.
Yeah, is what actually needs to go.
Yeah.
What actually needs to be sacrificed and let go of and sunken beneath.
Yeah, all of it.
Yeah. And so, yeah, the end of seeking is to come to that place, that recognition. And again, it's not something you bring about, something you are in control of. It's something that happens.
Yeah. It's somewhere you get, ultimately. Yeah.
It's a place you find yourself, an insight of life, a recognition, a remembrance, a noticing of, this is
how it is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we only give up all our strategies once
they're seen as such.
They're seen how futile they are.
Yes, exactly. But they are strategies, and that ultimately they're not going to serve you.
No strategy's
going to
work. Yeah.
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 Yeah. I say this so often, and I feel in some ways the book that I'm writing is just saying this in so many millions of ways. To walk through life with your head bowed and your palms open and your heart at the center of all is to see it as an offering, is to see it as a gift, is to see it as the flow of life through you.
Well, we receive it all.
Yeah.
I mean, the givenness of all existence.
Yeah.
There's nothing that we can take claim of as our personal own that we've, none of it, not a thing.
This is why gratitude is such a profound statement of a fragrance of being.
Yeah.
Gratitude is not something you have to do, although it can come about that way, sure. but it's gratitude as something you are, something that, you know, an emanation of the heart that sees the nature of life and therefore sees all that we have to be grateful for, all the gifts and the blessings that life bestows. And I think it's blessed is the one that really gets that and really lives that and recognizes the truth of that.
Yeah.
Because then every expression, every feeling, every moment becomes this sort of beautiful blessing of life. And I know I'm speaking in this sort of language that makes it sound all beautiful and lovely, but actually some of the most profound times in my life where I've really had that, like, just bottoming out, like, deep gutsy gratitude is where life has been so much of a challenge, where, you know, there has been sort of prayers for, like, life, help me through this moment, I don't know how to go on. You know, and I've had plenty of those moments in my life where it's like I don't see how this is gonna work out, and it's like it's those moments where I surrender it all and give myself to life, and there's where the gratitude comes. And it's not because I've got the thing I want, it's because I've given up, and not given up in terms of all right, whatever, I'll put up with this, but a genuine surrender, a genuine I lay myself down to life, I give myself to life, do with me as you will. And it's those moments where the letting go happens, and the heart starts to take over, life starts to take over.
Grace.
And it's grace, It's grace is seen and tasted and known in those moments.
I know.
And so it's actually been my hardest moments that I would say have made me appreciate life the most. Maybe not in the immediacy of it.
Well, sometimes not. The fierce grace of it. It's recognizing it even in the fierceness. It's grace. That's the thing. And sometimes it is overshadowing too.
Yeah.
That's all right.
Yeah.
But somehow it's all grace. It's all given.
Yeah.
And
it's all received. It's like, and I don't mean that in terms of how it's received. I mean, like, you know, it is given to you and it is received by you as well.
Mm.
It's like whatever is happening in your life is met on some level, even on a level of I don't want this.
Mm.
It is still met.
Okay. That's it for today. Thank you for listening, everyone. I hope you enjoy. If you like it, please like it. If you feel like sharing it, please do. And please subscribe, and you'll get to hear about new episodes.
Yeah. And in, what's the word? In light of this episode, this is our offering to you.
Yeah, we offer it up. Okay, bye for now.